Chagiga Daf Chavdal. We're beginning Chav Gimel Amud Beis. We are starting at the two dots halfway down on the Amud. We go back to the Mishnah, opening Mishnah, the last parak here in Chagiga. Mishnah enumerated 11 times in which we're going to be machmir by Kodesh than that of Truma. Truma and Kodesh obviously are the highest levels of Kedusha. There is a case to be made that the Mechatas and the Efer Chatas is even higher than that, but as far as Kedusha is concerned, it basically goes from Chulin to Maaser Sheni to Truma up to Kodesh. So despite the fact that Truma and Kodesh are in high levels of Kedusha, in 11 areas of Halacha, so Kodesh, is that going to exceed that of Truma? We already learned back on Chaf Aleph that the breakup of the Mishnah can actually be done into two halves, first half, second half of the Mishnah. First half is the first six cases. I'm presenting the Gemara right now according to Rava. First half of the Mishnah is the first six cases. Second half of the Mishnah is the last five cases. And there are differences between the first six and the last five. But nevertheless, we are right now focusing on the last five. And specifically, we are going on Tziruf. Tziruf is now the seventh case of the Mishnah. And we start with the Gemara. So as far as Tziruf, and that means to say that you have granulars in a bowl. So those granulars are going to be unified despite the fact that they are different particles of food. Nevertheless, when they are combined in a bowl, so it will be unified vis-a-vis Kodesh, but not vis-a-vis Truma. That means to say that if Truma were to touch one of the particles, one of the granules, so by Kodesh, all of it becomes Tame. It's unified. But when it comes to Truma, only the one particle that gets touched, that's going to be Tame. If it happens to be that the one that gets touched is Tame, the one next to it is going to be a Sheni, and the one next to that is going to be a Shlishi. But obviously that's it. In other words, there's no longer any spread of the Tuma as long as we consider the particles to be distinct. But by Kodesh, we do not view them as distinct. We view them as unified. Menan Emilia, the Gemara opens up the discussion with, how do I know this? I'm Rabbi Chanin, I'm a Krak, Kavachas, Asara Zahav, Malei Kataris. Hakasav Asu, Lecho, Masha, Bekaf, Achas, Adrasha. By the Nisim who offer Karbanos for the first 12 days of the inauguration of the Mishkan in the Midbar. So we're familiar, the Pesukim and Parshas Naso goes and repeats the Karbanos that are offered by each one of the Nesim, despite the fact that each one is identical to one another. Nevertheless, the Torah goes through each one of them, and we know that as part of the Karbanos that they offer, so they're offering a bowl that's filled with Kataris, Kaf Achas. And the Gemara's Drasha is that Achas tells us that all the particles within the bowl, even though it's Kataris, which means that they are granules, the particles, but nevertheless, Achas are going to be unified. Certainly sounds like from our Gemara over here that this is a Drasha Doraisa. Now that is going to be a little bit difficult, and Tosfos already made this observation earlier in the Perek, in that the Gemara back on Chaf Aleph Amud Beis says that all the cases in the Mishnah are really Tuma Derabanan. And meanwhile, the Gemara over here is providing a Drasha. Okay, certainly problematic, but meanwhile, we're just going to learn the Gemara Kipshuta. So Rav Kahana. Rav Kahana challenges the premise that we're talking about a Din Doraisa over here based on a Braisa. So Mishnah in Adios, Hosi Rabbi Akiva, Asos, Akhtoros, Ralavon, Bagachalim, Shim, Nagab, Tvul, Yom, Bid, Miksos, Apostles, Kulo. Rabbi Akiva added, flour, Ketoros, Lavona, coals, that if a Tvul Yom were to touch one of it, it all becomes tummy. Meaning, Rabbi Akiva added a list of a number of different particles when put into a bowl, is going to be subject to Ichud, to unification. Now, Vahadur Rabbanani, now the Gemara says, now this is talking about a Dinda Rabban, it's not a Dinda Raisa. Contrary to the fact that the Gemara just darshened it from a pasuk at the beginning of the sugyo. Mimai. How do I know it's a din de rabbanan? Mi diktani resha. Because we're going to go back to that same Mishnah in Adios, and we're going to go to the beginning of the Mishnah. Heid Rabbi Shimon ben Misera, alefer chata, shenaga, tamay ben miksasa, shetim eskula. So, Rabbi Shimon ben Misera testified that if you have efer chata, so that's the ashes of the paraduma, once the paraduma is reduced to ash, and a tamay person were to touch part of it, it all becomes tamay. Vikatani, host of Rabbi Kiva. And on that, Rabbi Kiva added. So in other words, we know the starting point of the discussion is Efer Chatas, and Rabbi Kiva added to that. As Rashi points out over here, the Efer Chatas has to be a Din Darabanan. It can't be a Din Daraisa. Why? So Rashi over here makes the argument because then we know when it comes to Efer of the Paraduma, so it's not a carbon. The Paraduma is not a carbon. Now, although despite the fact that the Torah describes it as a Chatas, and we even describe it as the Efer Chatas throughout the Mishnayos and the Gemara, nevertheless, when all is said and done, it's not a carbon. Now, of course, we know it's not a carbon. It's not shechted in the base of Mikdash, shechted outside the base of Mikdash. If, in fact, it were a carbon and shechted outside the base of Mikdash, we call that shechut echut. So it's one of the more seriously serve in the Torah. It's not a carbon. So if we're saying that there's unification by the Efer Chatas, that clearly is a din d'rabbanan. Can't be a din d'araisa. The drasha that we quoted is by Kodesh, by carbon. This is not a carbon. And now when Rabbi Kiva is mosif onto that, so if the starting point is a d'rabbanan, so the hosaf for Rabbi Kiva also has to be a din d'rabbanan as well. So Amar Ish Lakish Mishum Bar Kapar. So now we have some explaining to do. Because we just saw together that the Mishnah Nedios is describing that this idea of unification is a din d'rabbanan. And that runs contrary to our Gemara. Our Gemara says that it's a din d'araisa. The Gemara has a drasha for it. So Amar Rish Lakish Mishum Bar Kapar. We now turn to the top of Chavdal Amid Aleph. The Eidus of Rabbi Akiva, that's the Din Rabbanan, is talking about Shayari Mincha, meaning carbon mincha after the kumbitz has been taken off by the Kohen, burnt on the Mizbeach, so the remainder is called Shayari Mincha, to be eaten by the Kohanim in the Azara, Zichrei Kohuna. Anyway, what's the halacha regarding Shayari Mincha? Shayari Mincha, so doesn't need a kli. So Min HaTorah, as the Gemara is about to explain in more detail, so Min HaTorah, it's not subject to Tziruf. It's not going to be unified. So under those circumstances, the idea that it is unified, that's a Din D'Rabbanan. As far as what the drush is that we quote at the beginning of the Sugya, Kaf Achas V'Asar Zav Malek HaTorahs, that's talking about where it does need a Kli. And now the Gemara is going to spell all this out. So Min HaTorah, if something needs a Kli, like the Ketores, or like any of the examples where it's in need of a Kli, the Kli is there to imbue it with Kedusha, so then we have Tziruf, and that operates on a D'Oraisa level. She'ein Tzarech L'Kli and Kli Mitzar Fo. Now, if it doesn't need a Kli, like let's say, for example, the Shayari Mincha. Shayari Mincha doesn't need a Kli. In other words, it already was put into a Kli, and at this point in time, it's just simply going to be consumed by a Kohen. So it doesn't need a Kli. So if it doesn't need a Kli, so Min HaTorah, there's no Tziruf. And the Chachamim made a gzera that even though at this point in time it doesn't need a kli, but if it's in a kli, the kli is going to be mitzarif. So the Gemara says, I understand that when it comes to the solus and the flower, but when it comes to Ketoros and Lavona, so what are you going to say? Meaning, don't they need the kli? So Amrav Nachman, Amrav Abaravu, Kagon Shetzar V'Nagabe Kartavla. So the Gemara says, no, in the case of the guitarist and in the case of the Lavona, so we're talking about where it was put on a flat. That means a flat piece of, now Rashi here explains, it's a flat piece of leather. So under those circumstances, mid the Araisa, even though it is Tzarech Kli, mid the Araisa, there's no Tzirif. Why is there no Tzirif? The Gemara goes on to explain. The Araisa yesh lo toch mitzarif, ein lo toch ena mitzarif. Because there's another requirement in terms of when there's going to be Tzirif, and that is when it has a toch. When and only when it has a toch, it's going to be subject to tziruf. So it needs to have a interior. It has to be like a bowl. And the Chachamim added that even though there is no toch, still there's going to be tziruf. So what the Gemara just concluded is that we made a split decision regarding tziruf. Sometimes it operates on a deraisa, sometimes it operates on a din d'rabbanan. When does it operate on a deraisa? And that's the drasha that we saw at the beginning of the sugya, kaf achas. So when it's Tzarech Kli, and on top of that, when there's a Toch, so when I have those two features, so then Tzirif operates on a D'oraisa level. If, however, I'm missing one of those two, i.e., there's no Tzarech Kli, like Shayari Mincha, alternatively, it doesn't have a Toch, like the Ketoros that's put on top of the, on the flat hide, so under those circumstances, Min HaTorah does not, there is no Din of Tzirif, and yet the Chachamim added a Din of Tzirif, which is what the Mishnah Eidos was describing. Okay, so, right now, as we presented it, Tziruf operates on a Daraisa, and when it doesn't operate on a Daraisa, so sometimes a Chachamim goes there, that still there's going to be a Din of Tziruf. Upligi, we're back in the Gemara, Chavdal Manalfa, Upligi, the Rabbi Chanina, Ad the Rabbi Chiyabar Abba. This halacha, Rabbi Chanin, that we just presented, is going against Rabbi Chiyabar Abba. The Amr Rabbi Chiyabar Abba, Amr Rabbi Yochanan, Medusa Shah Rabbi Akiva, Nishnes Mishnah Zu. The Amr Mishnah is based on the Eidus of Rabbi Akiva, meaning that Eidus of Rabbi Akiva that we saw in the Mishnah Nedios is going to be in synchronicity with our Mishnah right here in Chagiga. Notably, that our Mishnah in Chagiga is operating on a Din D'Rabbanan, not on a Din D'Oraisa. Meaning to say that according to Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba, there is no Din Tziruf Min HaTorah. The Din Tziruf operates only on the level of Min D'Rabbanan. What about the drasha that we saw in the beginning of our sugya? So the Gemara doesn't address it, but what we'll probably have to say is that that's an Asmachta Ba'ama. but that's not a, it's not a drasha Gemara. Okay, so in the Gemara itself, as we just concluded our first sugya of the daf, a question of tziruf. So there definitely is tziruf. That's not the question. The question is it operating on a din d'oraisa or is it operating on a din d'rabbanan? First approach of the Gemara is a hybrid approach, meaning that it's d'oraisa and it's d'rabbanan. It just depends on the circumstances. And the second approach of the Gemara is that it's all mid d'rabbanan, not min haTorah. Harivi b'kodesh pasul. We're now going back to the Mishnah, and we are in the eighth halacha of the Mishnah in terms of a chumah that you have by kodesh over that of truma, and that is kodesh goes up to a revi, truma only goes up to a shlishi in terms of levels of tumah. Tanya, the Gemara quotes the Braisa, I'm Rabbi Yosi Minayin Revi, b'kodesh u'pasul. How do I know that by kodesh it goes up to a revi? The word pasul over here just simply means it's the end of the line, meaning tuma does not go beyond a revi, but it does go up to a revi. Vidin, who the Gemara says is predicated on a kavachomer ma mechusa kippurim. Shemut b'truma pasul b'kodesh. Consider now mechusa kippurim. That is referring to somebody who already went through his shivanakiyim, toveled on the seventh day, experienced herif shemesh after the seventh day. So from that point and going forward, the Torah describes an individual as being tahor. Now, he's tahor, which means that he's allowed to eat truma. Even though right now he is not disqualified from eating truma, in fact, he's totally permissible for this individual to eat truma. Nevertheless, he's what's called mechutz kippurim, which means that he's still lacking in bringing his karbanos on day 8. So he'll bring his karbanos, meaning the next day. And after he brings his karbanos, then and only then he's going to be able to go into the base of Mikdash and eat karbanos. So, when it comes to the Mechusa Kippurim, for him, he is compatible with Truma. He's incompatible with Karban. So the Gemara says, Ma Mechusa Kippurim Shemutu B'Truma Pasul B'Kodesh. Shlishi. So the Gemara says, now that we know the Mechusa Kippurim is compatible with Truma and incompatible with Kodesh, now let's look and compare this with the level of a Shlishi. Now, I admit that the comparison over here is a little bit difficult, and it's going to be a little bit of a struggle to understand. And Baruch Hashem, we've covered this Gemara numerous times in Shas. We see it over here. We saw it back in the Sugya of Rabbi Chanina's Gan Kohanim at the end of the first parak of Psachim. We're going to see it again in Mirza Hashem and Sota. Anyway, we've seen this Sugya numerous times, and still, it's just a little bit of a struggle. The Gemara is comparing the person who's a Mechusa Kippurim to the Shlishi. That's a level of Tuma. So Shlishi, Shepasa B'Truma, but the idea is as follows. Now, when we talk about the Shlishi, which disqualifies by Truma, so Eino Din Shiyas to reveal a Kodesh. Now, for sure, if Shlishi is going to pasul Truma, it should. Now, you expect the sentence to end off by saying it's going to pasul Kodesh. Meaning the Kal V'Chomer is predicated on, look, let's compare the Mechusa Kippurim to that of Truma. If Mechusa Kippurim is compatible to Truma and unacceptable regarding Kodesh, so Shlishi, which is incompatible to Truma, for sure should be incompatible to Kodesh. That's the Kal V'Chomer. That's the argument. Now, what the Gemara did is a little bit of a, what seems to be a rule breaker, because when concluding the Kal V'Chomer, the Gemara says regarding Kodesh, you know what it is by Kodesh? Revi, it even goes up a level. Now, that violates the rule of Dayo. I'll explain that better in just a moment. V'laman, let's just finish reading the Gemara. V'laman, Shlishi L'Kodesh, Minatora, V'Revi, B'Kal V'Chomer. Shlishi L'Kodesh is Minatora, and Revi'i is learned out through a Kal V'Chomer. Now, the way Rashi explains all this, it goes like this. We have a rule when generating a halacha through a Kal V'Chomer of Dayo. Dayo means that when I'm sourcing a halacha from one point to another point, which is what we're doing with a Kal V'Chomer, we're taking it from one case, which is Kal, moving it to another case, which is Chomer. So the resulting halacha cannot exceed what I'm learning it from. In other words, it's capped. A Kal V'Chomer is always going to have a cap, a built-in cap, where whatever I'm sourcing it from to where my destination is, the destination cannot exceed where I'm sourcing it from. This is the rule of Dayo. Discussed in the Gemara Baba Kama, Daf Chafei, Rashi over here quotes it. Now, when it comes to our Kal V'Chomer, so therefore one would conclude that from Mechusa Kippurim, which is incompatible to Truma, compatible to Kodesh, so Shlishi, which is incompatible to Truma, for sure should be incompatible to Kodesh. But when we talk about incompatible for Truma, what do we mean? We mean Shlishi. So when we say now it's incompatible for Kodesh, we should also mean Shlishi there as well, based on the rule of Dayo. Rashi explains that's what the Gemara's next line is coming to explain. The next line of the Gemara is, yeah, but when it comes to Shlishi by Kodesh, we knew it already. Meaning, if all the Kal V'Chomer was going to tell us is that by Kodesh, Shlishi is possible, that's already a known fact, it's a known entity. In just a moment, where the Gemara is going to cite the Psukim to tell us how we know it already. But for our purposes right now, we could just simply say, it's known. Now that it's known, so what am I going to do with my Kal V'Chomer? meaning if I just went through with my Kal Vachomer operating with the cap of Shlishi, so what comes out now is the Kal Vachomer is going to get us to a destination which we knew already. The Gemara Baba Kama's Rashi here cites, asks the following question. What happens to a Kal Vachomer where, if I employ the rule of Dayo, so then it doesn't teach us anything? So what do we do? Now, to be fair and to be somewhat more intellectually honest, the Gemara there debates and deliberates. The way I'll present the Gemara right now is that, I'll just say it simply, and I am oversimplifying it. If, in fact, the Kal Vachomer using the rules of Dayo is not going to get us anywhere, so then what we could do is we can ignore the rules of Dayo, meaning we could exceed the cap. Since using the Kal Vachomer is only going to get me to a Shlishi by Kodesh, which I knew already, so therefore, via the Kal Vachomer, what I can now do is I can go up a level, and that's how we get to Revi, and that's what the Gemara just taught us. Shlishi l'Kodesh min HaTorah, v'Revi b'Kal Vachomer. Okay, that's the Gemara, as Rashi's understanding. And now the Gemara is just simply going to spell out, Shlishi l'Kodesh min HaTorah minayin. How do I know there's such a thing as Shlishi l'Kodesh? Consider the following, Dechsiv. V'Abasa asher yiga b'chol tamei lo yochal. So if basa comes into contact with tamei, so you're not allowed to eat it. Now this is the Torah's description of a sheretz going into a klicheres where there's a food inside the klicheres. So we know that the airspace of the klicheres and the klicheres itself become tamei by the sheretz going in interior. Then, in turn, when it touches the basar now is going to become, the food inside is now going to become tamei. Now, if you're following, the sheretz is an av, the klicheres is a rishon, and the food inside is going to be a sheni. Now, when that in turn touches basar kodesh, what's basar kodesh going to be? It's going to be a shlishi. Milo askina denaga b'sheni b'kamer rechmano lo yechal. And so what happened was is that the food inside the klicheres came into contact with the basar kodesh. And now the basar kodesh is a shlishi. So now, this is where the Gemara said earlier, I already know that by kodesh it's going to be a shlishi. So revi mi kavachomer hu hadamaran. So therefore the revi is going to be learned out of the kavachomer. While kavachomer, the Gemara says what we just said a couple of lines earlier. Okay, adkan. So this is the Gemara just simply highlighting and sourcing, how do I know that by Kodesh it goes up to Revi, but by Truma it only goes up to Shlishi. Next. Uvi Truma, Imnit Meis, V'chule. We're up to the next halacha on the Mishnah. Again, going back to the first Mishnah of the third Perek. And this is halacha number 9. And that is that when one hand is a Sheni, remember, by Tumas Agot, by a person becoming Tamei, it's binary. It's either all or nothing. Either you are all tamei, or you are all tahor. And meanwhile, on a number of occasions, the Chachamim Meitakan is going back to the Tkufa Beit Shammai Beis Hillel, in which, if your hands came into contact with certain items, your hands are going to become tamei. Midrabanan. Okay? The Gemara in Shabbos enumerates and goes through all these circumstances. This is the Yirches Davar of the Gemara in Shabbos. Anyway, a discussion over here, what happens now if one hand is tamei and the other hand is tahor, which is of course possible, meaning one hand came into contact with the source of a sheni, and the other hand did not come into contact. So under those circumstances, so can I take my Torah hand and handle Truma? Yes. Can I take my Torah hand and handle Kodesh? No. That's what we learned in the Mishnah. Now the Gemara is going to give us a couple of details in this halacha. So if Shizbi says that as far as the halacha of this Mishnah, that's talking about when one hand is touching the other. To illustrate, meaning your Torah hand right now is handling the Kodesh, and your Tamei hand is right now currently touching your Torah hand, which is touching the Kodesh. That becomes the problem. This is Rav Shizbi's understanding. Now again, by Truma, there's no problem whatsoever. Meaning by Truma, as long as your Torah hand is handling the Truma, you're fine. But the Mishnah says that when your Torah hand is handling the Kodesh now becomes Tamei. And on that, Rav Shizbi says, but that's only in a circumstance where your tummy hand is currently touching your Torah hand as your Torah hand is handling the Kodesh. But if your hands are not touching one another, and the only thing touching the Kodesh is your Torah hand, then it would be fine. Now, obviously, this is a Chiddush, meaning this is not the simple reading of the Mishnah, but he feels that this is the case and only the case in which the food is going to be affected, the Kodesh is going to be affected by, even though it's only being handled by your Torah hand. So Abaye says, well, why don't we consider the following? We have a braisa. In the braisa, it's your hands are dry, and one hand is going to be mitame its friend, in order to be mitame kodesh, but not chuma. Divrei Rebbe. In other words, what Rebbe is telling us is exactly what we learned in the Mishnah. that when one hand is tummy and the other hand is tahor, so the when it comes to Kodesh, the tummy hand will affect the tahor hand, and that means to say that even though it's only your tahor hand handling the Kodesh now is going to become tummy. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Livsol Avol LaTamei. Now Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda agrees, but his point of disagreement is just simply the level, the degree of tumah on the Kodesh that you touch. The Kodesh is going to be pasul. The Kodesh is not going to become tummy. The difference between tumah and pasul, as we've discussed already numerous times, is that tumah means that the Kodesh is going to be shlishi because it can now go ahead and be metame another Kodesh, as opposed to pasul, which means it's a revi, meaning that this is the end of the line. And if this Kodesh, which is a revi, touched something else, it's not going to be affected. Okay, now, the detail right now that we want to focus on is the beginning of the Braisa where it says that your hands were niguva, they were dry. Now, the Gemara focuses. Now, if we're talking about where your hands were not touching one another, it makes a lot of sense. That's why we're discussing the cases where your hands are dry. But if all we're talking about is when your hands are touching one another, and that's the only time that this halacha applies, my rebusi de neguva. So then what's the chiddush of it being dry? Meaning consider, as Rashi over here goes on to explain. Let's say your hands are moist. In other words, there's liquid on your hands. Now again, this is a basic knowledge of tumah tahara, which Rashi over here goes over, which I'm gonna speak out. And that is that when your hands are sheni and there are liquid on your hands, so what happens to the liquid? The liquid becomes a risha. Now, there are a number of dine derabanan that are playing a role over here. Your hands being a sheni in and of itself is a din derabanan. When sheni touches liquid, the liquid jumps up to being a rishon. That's another derabanan. Not to go through all the reasons why, but right now, let's just deal with the facts at hand. So if one hand, which is a sheni, touches liquid, the liquid becomes a rishon. Now, if one hand were to touch the other hand, so now what happens to the other hand? Your hand now is a sheni, meaning the liquid's a rishon touching your other hand, which is now going to be a sheni. So if we're talking about where your hands are wet, there's no chiddush, meaning we now know what would be the result where one hand were to touch the other hand. So why is the Braisa going over the case of neguva? It must be that it's talking about where the hands were not touching one another. That's the argument the Gemara makes after having seen the Braisa, after having seen the word neguva at the beginning of the Braisa. So it certainly gives us the impression that the Braisa was talking about where the hands were not touching one another. Okay, so the Gemara does not... The Gemara ends the discussion. The Gemara is not totally refuting Rav Shizbi's Chiddush, but it certainly seems like the Gemara is significantly challenged his Chiddush. The Gemara moves on. Now, the next words of the Gemara, Idmar Nami, the last lines of the Amud. Now, probably what we should be doing over here, this is a number of Haggahs that were done by the Bach and others. Anyway, probably what we should do is take out the word Nami, because this seems to be a new discussion. I said the Bach, I meant Rav Bissal of Ronsberg. Either way, Itmar, Amrish Lakish Loshanu Ella Yado. The idea that your tummy hand adversely affects your Tahor hand when handling Kodesh is only talking about where it's your hand, meaning your tummy hand and your Tahor hand, and you're handling the Kodesh with your Tahor hand. Aval Yad Chaver La. But if let's say it was your friend's hand, meaning your tummy hand touched your friend's hand, so there it doesn't impact it at all. That is the shita of Reish Lakish. Rav Yochanan says no. Echa yad of echa yad chaver, ba'osa yad lifso. Aval lo litame. So, Rav Yochanan says that your hand is going to affect not only your hand, but someone else's hand as well. Meaning that this idea of your sheni hand adversely affecting somebody else's hand, it's not just limited to your own hand, somebody else's hand as well. And ba'osa yad lifso aval lo litame. Now, Rav Yochanan adds another halacha as well. And that is that when I'm using the derivative hand, meaning it could be yours, it could be somebody else, it doesn't matter according to Rav Yochanan, but if I'm using the derivative hand, what happens to the Kodesh? It becomes pasul, meaning it becomes a revi. So, and how does Rav Yochanan arrive at this conclusion? Go back to our Mishnah. Let's take a look at our Mishnah. When the Mishnah introduces us to this 10th halacha, when the Mishnah introduces us to the 9th halacha, so the Mishnah is a little bit verbose. In fact, the Mishnah is just a little bit repetitive, and the Gemara makes this observation. Because as the Mishnah rounds up the ninth halacha, it says that the yad is metame chaver to lekodesh of olot truma. If you go back to the Mishnah, reread the Mishnah, you will see that all this is superfluous. Hasulamali, why do I need that extra clause? Hatanile reisha. It already stated that at the first part of the ninth halacha. And so the Mishnah seems to be repeating itself. Now the Mishnah is not repeating itself. The Mishnah is obviously teaching us a halacha, but we just have to deduce it from the Mishnah. So it's coming to teach us that if my tummy hand were to touch my tar hand, and then when the Mishnah repeats, it's telling me, even if my tummy hand touches somebody else's tar hand, so now the hand that's being touched is now going to be a derivative, at which point in time it's going to go ahead and pasul kodesh. And Rav Shlakish agrees now. He ends up recanting and going in line with Rav Yochanan. And the Gemara quotes a memra in the name of Rav Shlakish. Rav Shlakish ends up capitulating. And he says that if your tummy hand were to touch either your hand or somebody else's hand, the derivative hand now that was touched is in fact going to adversely affect Kodesh. Notably, it'll passel the Kodesh. Now, both Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish are insistent that it passels the Kodesh. Now, hopefully you recall, because on the bottom of the Amud Aleph, we just went through to Machlokas Tanayim. The Gemara right now, Velifso Avalotame Tanayim, the Gemara now is going to acknowledge that this is a Machlokas amongst the Tanayim. Now, it's only been 15, 20 lines ago that the Gemara introduced us to the Braisa. Slightly unclear right now why the Gemara is looking for another possible Mishnah that teaches us this halacha, that's a machlokas tanaim, in terms of what the derivative hand is going, how it's going to affect Kodesh. Will it make it a shlishi or make it a revi? We're going to now look at a Mishnah Yadayim. We think we're going to say pshat in the Mishnah Yadayim. We're going to end up rejecting it. We're going to end up going back to the braisa from the bottom of the previous summit. Okay. Don't know why we're going to the Mishnah. I could guess, but anyway. Did not. So anything that passes truma is going to be metami yadayim to make them shnios. V'yad metame chaverta, div Rabbi Yeshua. So according to Shita Rabbi Yeshua, one hand is going to be metame another hand. Good. And the Chachamim are yadayim shnios saying, v'ein sheni os sheni. And the Chachamim say, no, yadayim are shnios, a sheni is not going to make the other hand a sheni. Now, my love, that's the end of the Mishnah. The Gemara now is going to make a diuk. My love, sheni hu delo avid, ashlishi avid. Ah, so a hand is not going to make another hand a sheni. Ah, but a hand is going to make another hand a shlishi, right? So Dilma Loshna Ave Lo Sheni Ave Lo Shlishi. So the Gemara says, I don't know, not necessarily. Maybe the Pshat in the Mishnah is that a Sheni does not affect another hand at all. And if in fact that's the Shita of the Chachamim, so once again we don't have a support to this idea that the derivative hand is subject to a machlokas, whether or not it'll make the Kodesh a Shlishi or Revi. So Eliki Ki Hani tonight. So the Gemara says, fine. So the Mishnah Yadayim does not speak to our issue. But the following brisa certainly does. The Tanya, we learned in the brisa. Yad Neguva, mitame is chaver to latame bekodesh, aval lo lechuma dive Rebbe. Rebbe Yosef, Rebbe Yehuda, Omer, Oso Yad, Lipsol, aval lo latame. The brisa brings down a clear machlokes between Rebbe and Rebbe Yosef, Rebbe Yehuda, vis-a-vis what happens now to the derivative hand. Is the derivative hand going to be mitame kodesh, that's a sheet of Rebbe, or is the derivative hand just going to be pas of the kodesh, i.e. make it a revi? That's the sheet of Rebbe Yosef, Rebbe Yehuda. So this issue of Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan in terms of how adversely the derivative hand is going to affect the Kodesh, whether it's going to make it a Shlishi, whether it's going to make it a Revi, is in fact a Machlokas amongst the Tanayim. We are now up to the 10th Halacha of the Mishnah. The Gemara goes on to explain, Ochlin Neguvim B'yadayim Esu'abos. Now, when we read the Mishnah, so we set up Shah in the Mishnah based on Rashi, and we said that the food never came into contact with Tumah. The food never came into contact with a liquid. And as a result of that, the food now was impervious to Tumah because it is not yet Mokshe L'Kabel Tumah. So that is the pshat that we offered when we read the Mishnah. As we're going to see in just a moment, the Gemara is going to change our understanding for a very simple reason. So Tanya Amar Rabbi Chanina ben Tiknos v'chi yesh neguva l'korosh v'alo chibas l'korosh mechshar tam. So over here, the Gemara quotes the Tosefta. The Tosefta has a rhetorical question by Chanina ben Tiknos, and that is that there's no such thing as dry food as it relates to Kodesh. Meaning the idea of dry food is that it never came into contact with a liquid, and therefore it's not Mokshe L'Kabel Tumah. But when it comes to Kodesh, it's simply not true. meaning it's certainly true that you could have food that never came into contact with a liquid, but once we're using it as kodesh, we're using it as karban. So there's an idea of chibas hakodesh. Chibas hakodesh, anything being used as karban, literally a love, a desire for the kodesh, meaning because of now the heightened level of kedusha, it gives it its status of being mukhshar lekabel tuma, even if it didn't actually come into contact with a liquid. So this is the idea behind Chibas HaKodesh. How is this operating? Is this operating on a Din D'oraisa? Is this operating on a Din D'Rabbanan? Happens to be the Gemara discusses it elsewhere. Meanwhile, for our purposes right now, so by Kodesh, there's no such thing as non-Hechsher. Kodesh, by definition, is Mukhshar L'Kabel Tuma based on the principle of Chibas HaKodesh. So now, when the Mishnah says that if I touched food that never came into contact with a liquid by Truma, so it's not going to be... it's not going to be Tamei because it was not Mokshar, but by Kodesh, it will be Tamei. So what, essentially what Rabbi Hanina is asking is that of course it's going to become Tamei, but not because of the Chumras of Kodesh, but simply because Kodesh by definition is considered Mokshar. So the Gemara says, Lo Tzricha, so the Gemara says, fine. So based on this, we're going to have to re-understand the Mishnah Kegon, Shetach Lo Chaver, Lo Soch Piv, O Shetach Lo Latzmo, Bekush Vekarkar. So what happens is the following. Is that the food got into your mouth, and the food got into your mouth, even though your hands are currently shneim, but the food got into your mouth without you having to touch them. Either somebody put the food in your mouth, or you took a toothpick and you put the toothpick, you stabbed the food with the toothpick and you put it in your mouth. And as Rashi points out over here, even though your hands are shani, the tumma is not going to be conducted through the toothpick. The toothpick is pshutikli eitz. Pshutikli eitz is not a conductor of tumma. Okay, so you got now the food into your mouth. Now, what you wanted to do is, while you're chomping on the kosher food, so it happens to be that you would like to eat some condiments, in this case, onions, whatever, and in its chulin, so imayhem lekodesh. Now, gazrubu rabban lechuma lo gazrubu rabban, I'm sorry. Lekodesh gazrubu rabban lechuma lo gazrubu rabban. And now, this is what the Mishnah means. That when it comes to kodesh, so, can you pick up the chulin with your hands, which are sheni? Yeah. Can you put them in your mouth? Again, the answer is yes. Because again, when it comes to chulin, the chulin will not be affected by your hands at all. Chulin do not become a shlishi. The most that chulin can become is a sheni. But your hands, which are a sheni, are not going to affect the chulin. Remember, with every transmission of tumma, or I should say better, almost every transmission of tumma, so it goes down a level. And if it can't go down a level, so then there's not going to be a transmission. So when your sheni hands are touching the chulin will be unaffected. Okay. So now, in principle, you could take your hands, which are sheni, take the food, put it in your mouth. However, there is a concern, slight concern, that what's going to end up happening is that when you put your fingers in your mouth, so the fingers are going to then end up touching the kodesh, which is in your mouth, which obviously are going to disqualify the kodesh. Actually do more. It's going to be metame the kodesh. So, by Kodesh, this is a concern. By Truma, it's not a concern. Which again, it's that balancing act that we discussed since the beginning of the parak, meaning that these are slight concerns. And being that they are slight concerns, so by Truma, so the Chachamim didn't feel the need to make any kind of gzera. But when it comes to Kodesh, because of the Kedusha of Kodesh, so therefore the Chachamim made gzera. That is the Gemara's new understanding of the 10th halacha of the Mishnah. And finally, number 11. Ha'onin mechusa kippurim. So when it comes to an onin mechusa kippurim, despite the fact that they don't have to tov on the mikvah, may ikar adin, but as a takana derabbanan, they're going to have to tov on the mikvah. Let's just illustrate mechusa kippurim so that we get to see it clearly. Our mechusa kippurim was, let's say, a zav. I'm just giving one example. There are numerous examples. And he was a zav gadol, which means that he needed to count shivin akiyim. And let's say he was a real zav gadol, which means that he had three consecutive re'iyas. And so that means not only does he have to count Shiv Nikim, but at the conclusion of Shiv Nikim, he's going to tov on the mikvah, he'll experience her of Shemesh on day number 7 of Shiv Nikim, and then the next day, he's going to have to bring karbanos to the base of Mikdash. Until he brings the karbanos, he can't go into the base of Mikdash, and he can't and he can't eat karban. Now, what the Mishnah is telling us is the following. After having tov on the mikvah on day 7 and experiencing her of Shemesh on day 7, he's tahor. And as we already discussed on the Amud Alf of today's daf, not only is he tahor, he can eat truma. He's tahor. However, his ability to eat karbanos will not be realized until the next day when he brings his karbanos. The karbanos which are for the purposes of kapara. Now, after he brings the karbanos, he can eat kodesh. What the chachamim were mesakein is that in order for him to be able to eat Kodesh, even though he tovled his tefillah of Tahara on day number 7, he's going to have to tovel again today. Now, it's not really a tefillah of Tahara because he's Tahar. So what is it? So Takana Durabanan. And the Gemara over here just gives us one line of understanding. My taima, so why? Meaning, why were the Chachamim Mesakin? Kevin da'ada'ina habu asire atzrachinu Rabbanan tefillah. So the Gemara says, because up until this point in time, he was forbidden from eating Kodesh, and he's making now this major shift from going from a position of not eating Kodesh to eating Kodesh. So therefore, as an extra stringency, so therefore they required him to tovel the mikvah in order to be able to eat Kodesh. Okay. Adkan, that takes us to the end of the daf. We'll get to review. So this daf concludes the discussion of the first Mishnah of the Perek. First Mishnah of the Perek, going back to Chaf Amud Beis, goes over 11 halachas in which Kodesh is going to be more chumer than that of Truma. And over the course of today's daf, Chav Dalid, we went over halacha number 7, Kliz Mitzaref, with two discussions regarding Siruf. One, as to whether or not it's a din d'oraisa or a din d'rabbanan, and when is it a d'oraisa and when is it d'rabbanan. And then number 2, it's not really a second point, but it's a counterpoint, which is that the entire din of Siruf is a din d'rabbanan, and any drasha by Siruf is just going to be an asmach d'balama. We went over the halacha revi because pasuv shlishi b'truma, that when it comes to kodesh it goes up to revi, when it comes to truma it goes up to shlishi. And the Gemara gives us the sourcing for that. It's a kavachomer, it's a drasha. Good. The ninth halacha is that if you have one hand which is a sheni and the other hand which is tahor, so what happens now if you're handling kodesh with your tahor hand? What happens if you handle truma with your tahor hand? And what happens if your tummy hand touches your tahor hand? So a lengthy discussion in the Gemara really took up a good part of today's daf in terms of what exactly happens when the tahor hand touches your tummy hand. Sorry. When the tummy hand touches your tahor hand, when your tummy hand touches somebody else's tahor hand, machlokus amongst the Amoraim, and a machlokus amongst the Tanaim in terms of the degree in which the derivative hand is in fact going to affect the Kodesh. 10th halacha of our Mishnah is that you can eat dry foods with your hands being a sheni. The simple pshat is that when it comes to Truma, that's no problem. When it comes to Kodesh, it's a problem. But the Gemara said that simple pshat is simply not going to work because when we have Kodesh, every Kodesh by definition is going to be considered Mukhshal HaKabal Tuma based on the principle of Chibas HaKodesh. So the Gemara therefore gave an alternative pshat in this 10th case in the Mishnah. And then finally, number 11, the Onin and Mechus HaKippurim, in order to eat Kodesh, even though they already toveled in the mikvah, they're going to have to tovel again. This is true when it comes to the eating of Kodesh, but it's not true for Truma. Meaning for Truma, once they do the tefillah for Tahara, that's it. They don't have to do an additional tefillah in order to eat Truma. Adkan.